The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
All right, well, thank you all for coming out on this rainy Friday morning. Probably went to sleep in as it is. Okay, but we're going to go through just some nuts and bolts about the bar exam. We're also going to talk more in depth about the NPRE since you are all everywhere there for 2 hours. Okay. You can stay if you want.
That's all right. Okay. Stop. I'm already signed up for roles.
Okay. we're also going to talk in depth about the NPRE since that's probably on the horizon for most of you coming up. But just to introduce myself, I am Myra Wilder. I'm the Senior Academic Counselor in the Office of Student Affairs. I work with Jackie, who's here as well. And I am tasked with kind of going through the bar exam, going through the parts of the bar exam, going through things that you guys need to start thinking about. I know that the bar is more than a year away, but now is really the time to kind of think about, okay, what jurisdiction am I going to take? You know, what courses have I not taken that maybe I should take to prepare me for the bar exam? And we'll go through all of that as we move through this presentation. If you have any questions while I'm talking, please feel free to just raise your hand and ask the question. I want to make this an open forum. I want to make it an open discussion. And if there's anything that you're not sure about or you want to ask me about, please feel free. I am not too far removed from being where you are. I'm an 07 grad of WCL. I took the bar in July of 2007. I took the New York State Law. Passed on the first try. It was a lot of work, but if I can do it, anyone can do it. So we're going to start, and then, again, please feel free to ask any questions as we go through. So first, obviously, who should take the bar exam? Everyone sitting here should take the bar exam. As you all know, the bar exam is a 2 to 3 day exam, depending upon the jurisdiction that you sit for, that basically tests your abilities, if you will, to practice in the state that you want to be admitted into. The bar exam, I call it the final hurdle in being a law student, because even though when you sit for the bar exam, you are no longer a law student because your degree has been conferred, it's kind of like you're going towards the light, and when you get through the bar exam, the light shines and you're done. So that's the bar exam. We're going to go through each part of the bar exam. Not every part is going to be applicable to the jurisdiction that you ultimately decide to take. There are some jurisdictions that use certain parts of the bar exam. There are some jurisdictions that do not. Obviously, you will have to check with the jurisdiction that you're thinking of taking to determine whether or not each specific part is administered off by that jurisdiction. Before we get to different parts, I want to direct you to this website. The National Conference of Bar Examiners is the organization that administers each of these parts of the bar exam that I have listed on the board. They are a great resource for you in terms of, number one, finding out where you should go if you need to find out, who runs New York State's bar exam, who runs Maryland's, who runs D.C. They also have a breakdown of each section, giving you more description of each section. They have sample exams. They have sample questions. So I encourage all of you to look at that website at some point in time, just to see what they offer. They are also the ones that you're going to look to when you are registering for the NPRE, that they are the organization that administers the NPRE. So let's start with what's on the bar exam. So first thing first, multi-state bar exam, the MBE. The MBE is administered in all jurisdictions with the exception of Washington State and Louisiana. So if you're sitting for either one of those two, you don't have to listen to this part. But if you are not, then it's a 200 multiple choice question exam in 6 hours, 3 hours in the morning, 3 hours in the afternoon. It's administered on the final Wednesday of July if you take the July exam, or the final Wednesday of February if you sit for the February exam. So if you're in a jurisdiction where it's a Tuesday, Wednesday exam, it would be day two of your bar exam. If you're in a jurisdiction that's a Wednesday, Thursday jurisdiction, it would be day one of your bar exam. If you are lucky to take the California bar exam, it's day two out of three of your bar exam because California is a 3 day exam. What does the MBE test? Well, the MBE tests most of your first year subjects. So it tests contracts, property, torts, con law, crim law, and crim pro, which they group together. And then the final subject that the MPE test that you do not take in first or second year is evidence. Okay? Evidence is the only upper level course that we offer here that we know with certainty is tested on the bar exam. Okay? And usually every year they do about 18 to 20 evidence questions on the MPE. With that being said, if you have not already taken evidence, you are highly recommended that you do so, okay? Obviously, you know, you may say, well, I don't want to be a litigator, I don't want to take evidence, what's the point? That may be true, but evidence is such a substantive area of law that I do not recommend your first exposure to evidence being when you take your bar review course, okay? And you know that it's going to be on the bar exam, so you should take it. Obviously, evidence is not a required course here at WCL, but there are some schools that do require evidence for the reasons that I've stated, that it is, you know, with certainty tested on the bar exam. So that's the MPE. Whatever methodology you use to study for the bar exam, whether it be through self-study or through a bar review course, I would highly recommend that you do as many practice MPE questions as you can, because you're going to have to learn how to time yourself. You know, the bar exam is an exam of endurance, and when you're studying for the bar exam, you're building up your endurance to get through the 2 or 3 days of the exam. So if you go to the National Conference of Bar Examiners website, they actually have sample MPE questions on there for you to look at. But that's the first part. That's the MPE, and most of you will have exposure to the MPE when you are. The second portion of the bar, the multi-state performance test, or the MPT. The MPT is administered by 33 jurisdictions. Okay, so not every jurisdiction administers the MPT. If you're interested in taking the California Bar, just as a side note, the California Bar does not use the MPT, but they do their own MPT. They call it the California Performance Test, which is based on California law. The MPT is a closed universe exam, so it's very similar to the closed memo that you guys did first year in legal rhetoric. The MPT basically tests your assessment skills, your analytical skills. There's no hard and fast rule in terms of what the exercise is going to be. You may be given a bunch of documents and asked to prepare a set of interrogatories to give to opposing counsel. You may be asked to write an opinion letter. You may be asked to write a letter to a judge requesting, say, suppression of evidence if it was a criminal case. We don't know, and I can't tell you what the MPT is going to be. But it is going to be a closed universe exam. You do not have to use any of the outside knowledge that you've been studying, you know, through the course of your preparation to successfully complete the MPT. Everything that you need will be given to you in a booklet. Now, the jurisdictions that utilize the MPT, some of them will use one MPT, some of them will use two MPTs. The MPT is a 90-minute exam, so if you get two MPTs, each MPT will be 90 minutes in duration. If you get one MPT, it'll be 90 minutes in duration. New York State, for example, does one MPT in the morning on the first day of the exam and then goes into the state-specific essay questions for the remainder of the day. So again, if you want to know whether or not the jurisdiction that you're interested in administers the MPT, you can go to the National Conference of Bar Examiners website. They actually give a list of the jurisdictions that are using the MPT for the 2000 exams. And then you can go to that jurisdiction and find out whether or not they do one or two MPTs. The third exam is the multi-state essay exam. And that exam is administered by 26 jurisdictions. Just to give you guys a sense of jurisdictions, the four most popular jurisdictions that are taken by WCL grads are Maryland, Virginia, New York, and California. Okay? None of those four use the multi-state essay exam. However, if you sit for the District of Columbia bar, the DC bar does use the multi-state essay exam. And the reason why states will use the multi-state essay exam is because they want to use it just in lieu of doing a state-specific essay exam. And it tests general principles of the law. The multi-state essay exam is 9 30-minute essays, so they're short essays. Jurisdictions will pick which essays they're going to grade and count towards your overall score. You don't know which ones they're going to use, so obviously you have to answer all 9, which sounds horrible, but that's just the case. Some jurisdictions will use 6, some jurisdictions will use 9, but on average, most jurisdictions will choose 6 of the essays. Subjects that are generally tested on the NE are evidence, torts, family law, property, conflicts of laws, federal civil rules of procedure, agency and partnership law, corporations, and negotiable instruments. That's generally the UCC area that's tested on the NEE. Now, just a note, you know, we offer here business associations, which groups together corporations, agency, and partnership all under one course. They separate it out in terms of how they test it. They test formation of corporations separately from the agency-partnership relationship. Okay? So that's the ME. Again, none of the four popular jurisdictions that WCL that WCL grads take test the MEE. If you're from the Chicago area or thinking of going back, you know, to Illinois does use the MEE on their exam, and also DC uses the MEE. Yes.
What do the four popular jurisdictions do in lieu of?
They have state-specific essays.
Okay, is it sort of set up the same, like short essays or?
Well, I can tell you from my experience, Maryland does, I believe, do a number of short essays. New York generally does, I think it's four, and I can't remember, I tried to block it all. I think New York does four essays, and they're definitely more than 30 minutes each. And then New York also has its own multiple choice section of New York State specific law that it does on the first day.
The jurisdictions that are not, some jurisdictions will combine the MPT with their own jurisdictional essay. They may or may not use the MEE.
Yeah.
So for jurisdictions that are basically selecting their own subject areas and testing you on it, they still by regulation have to provide the universe of subjects that they may test you on. So the same website that Myra is referring to, the ncbx.org, will take you from each jurisdiction, and they will provide the universe. Now, so when you hear that California, for example, is supposed to be a tough exam, oftentimes what that means is two things. One, they have a large number of subject areas that they're listing that they may test you on, 17, 18, as many as 22, 23. They're not going to test you on all of them. There's not enough time, but they're not going to tell you which ones they are. Conversely, they can't test you on anything that is outside that one. And then sometimes the other nuance that purportedly or actually makes some of the exams more challenging is that the jurisdictions will test you on their state law on that particular area. So in California, you might see California wills or California wills trust in the state. They're going to want you to know the nuances for the purpose of that state law or that state.
So as I said, you know, the MEE is more so, it's not really the norm amongst jurisdictions, but it's definitely out there. So you should, and again, ncbx.org lists those states that utilize it. And it could change by the time you guys sit for the exam next year, but it really hasn't changed that much over the course of the past couple of years. Any questions about these three before I get to the inquiry? Okay. All right, so let's talk about the NPRE. Has anyone here taken the NPRE? You took it in March?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else? Anyone taking it in August? Think you're taking it in August? Okay, so we have a good number of you. All right, so the NPRE is, you know, it's the Multi-State Professional Responsibility Exam. The NPRE is, again, also administered by the National Conference of Bar Examiners. It is not a state-specific test, so you will not see state-specific ethical rules on the NPRE. It is a 60-question test. 50 of those questions are scored. Every year what the National Conference of Bar Examiners does is they kind of do what they call test questions to kind of see what how the students or the examinees score on those particular questions for possible use in the 50 that are actually scored in for future exams. Again, you don't know which 10 are the giveaway questions, if you will, so you have to answer all 60. It's a scaled, the score is scaled, so usually on the low end, the score will be 50, on the high end, it will be 150. On average, the scale score for most test takers is around 100, give or take a couple points above or below. Okay, as I said, it tests your knowledge and understanding of professional conduct, standards, ethics, and it's based on the ABA Model Rules of Professional Conduct, which all of you have seen a million times in your ethics courses this semester, I'm presuming. The NPRE is required for most jurisdictions for admission, not to sit for the bar, but to be ultimately admitted to the bar. There are many jurisdictions, and again, you have to check with the ones that you're interested in, will allow you to sit for the bar exam if you have not yet taken the MPRE. There are some exceptions to that rule, so of course you have to do your due diligence and find out whether or not the jurisdiction requires it, but most jurisdictions will allow you to sit for the MPRE if you have not taken the MPRE. The asterisk to that, anyone interested in the Maryland bar, Maryland does not require the MPRE at all. So if you know for a fact that you're going to take the Maryland bar, you don't have to take the MPRE. The caveat to that, though, is if you're interested in waiving into DC, or if you think that at some point in time you may relocate to another jurisdiction, the MPRE would be required. In DC, the MPRE score is a minimum of a 75. So if you're sitting for the Maryland bar, but you know you're going to waive into the District of Columbia, you need to take the MPRE. So when is the MPRE given? The MPRE is given three times a year, March, August, and November. We generally recommend that students take the MPRE after they've completed legal ethics. Obviously, some students will take it in March during the semester that they are currently enrolled in legal ethics, which is fine as well, but most students will sit for it that August or that November. There's no passing grade per se on the MPRE. Okay, the passing grade for the MPRE is again going to be based on the jurisdiction upon which you're going to sit in. If you are thinking of taking the Virginia bar, the minimum scale score on the MPRE that you need to have is an 80. If you're sitting for New York, it's 85. If you're sitting for California, it's 86. Again, as I said, DC, it's 75. So you need to check with the jurisdiction or jurisdictions that you're interested in sitting for to determine what you're going to need on the MPRE. In terms of what you need to do to sit for the exam, first thing is you need to apply to take the exam. There's two ways to apply for the MPRE. Most people, since we are in a technology age, will apply online. If you apply online for the MPRE, you go directly to National Conference of Bar Examiners, you fill out the online application, you pay the $63 application fee, which is the application fee for the 2007 exams, and then you'll get a confirmation from them that you've been registered. When you apply for the exam, you also have to state test locations that you'd like to take the exam in. Now, for those of you who are interested in taking it in August and are going to be in the DC area, AU is actually the only testing site in Washington, DC that's administering the MPRE. So just as a side note. You can take the MPRE anywhere you want. If you're going back to New York, if you're going back to California, if you're going back to Texas, it doesn't matter where you take the MPRE. As long as you take it. The other way to apply for it is through the paper application. You can request the paper application, again, online, and when you receive the paper application, you'll also receive about a 50-page booklet that just kind of gives you the ins and outs of the MPRE, a lot of the administrative stuff. A lot of that information is also online, so if you don't like paper, just go through the electronic process. In terms of deadline, I'll give you guys... If you're thinking of taking the August exam, if you're thinking, I think the deadline is in July sometime. If you miss the first deadline to apply for the MPRE and you get to the late deadline, just know that the application fee doubles, so it would be $126, not $63. And then once you have applied for the exam, you'll get your test site a few weeks before the exam. The exam is about 2 hours and 15 minutes, so it takes up a morning, and then you're done. Now, one thing to remember with the MPRE is that if you know what jurisdiction you're going to sit for, or you have a good idea of what jurisdiction you're going to sit for, what you have the option of doing with the MPRE is you have the option of having your score sent to that jurisdiction. There are jurisdictional codes that the National Conference of Bar Examiners has set out for each state. What you can do when you apply is if you say, okay, I know I'm going to go back to New York. So you can put in the New York code for the MPRE. When you take the MPRE, your score will automatically be sent to the State Board of Law Examiners for New York. Same thing with any other jurisdiction. If, however, you decide, you get a job someplace. Say you get a job in Maryland, okay? Well, if you got a job in Maryland, you wouldn't have to send your score to Maryland. Let's use Virginia as an example. Say you got a job in Virginia, your employer says you have to sit for the Virginia bar. Well, last year when you took the NPRE, you decided to send your score to New York. What you have to do is you have to make a request to have a score report sent to Virginia. It's a $15 fee, and they will send the score report to Virginia, and you'll be done. Now, the one thing you need to consider again is make sure that the score that you got when you took it the first time is the minimum scale score that you need for Virginia. If you were in New York, if you were originally going to send it to New York, you got an 85. Virginia, as I said, the scale score is an 80. You're okay. You wouldn't have to worry about anything. However, if it's not, you're going to have to retake the exam, which nobody wants to do. So just remember to look into that. It's really important. The other thing to consider is if you're interested in taking two jurisdictions next summer, what some people like to do is if they're taking a jurisdiction as a Tuesday-Wednesday jurisdiction, they may couple that with a Wednesday-Thursday jurisdiction that's in close geographic proximity. New York, New Jersey is quite popular. New York, Massachusetts is popular. New York, Connecticut is popular. I've heard some people do Maryland, New Jersey. You want to make sure that your NPRE score is high enough for both of those jurisdictions so you can get ultimately admitted in both jurisdictions. Okay?
By applying to take the test earlier, do you have a better shot at getting the test site that you want? I know in some tests, like the LSAT, even if you applied earlier, you had a better shot of like getting the location you wanted to take the test. Do you know if that matters for the NPRE?
I've heard it does. I can't say with certainty that it does. I always err on the side of just be as early as possible, even if you're too early, which you wouldn't be too early if you applied now. But if, like I said, because if you're staying in D.C. and you want to take it in August, this is the only site. So it's not just going to be AU students. It's going to be UW students, Howard students, Georgetown, who want to sit for the exam here. So I would say just err on the side of applying as early as you possibly can so you don't get blocked out in the test site.
I kind of want to answer your question. It does matter.
It does matter?
I know somebody who applied like the last day and she had to go somewhere like Montgomery College in Maryland or something.
Thank you.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So we talked about what's on the bar. And then we also talked about the NPRE. So now let's talk about, where should I take the bar exam? Obviously, probably the main factor that drives where you're ultimately going to sit for the bar is your job opportunity. If you know where you're going to be working come graduation of next year, obviously you're going to sit for the exam where you're either A, your employer tells you you need to sit for the exam, or B, if you work for the federal government, it doesn't really matter. You may sit for the Maryland exam or the Virginia exam. I know people who sit for the New York exam even though they know they're going to be working for the government down here. If you don't have a job come graduation and it's more up in the air, well, you might think about a number of different things. First is, if you're focusing your job search in one particular geographic area, say, for instance, you're from California and you know that you want to go back to California, well, it would probably behoove you to sit for the California bar because that's where you ultimately want to practice. If you're focusing your efforts, say, in the Southeast region and you're looking at, possibly going to Florida or going to Georgia, figuring out which one of those two jurisdictions you want to take. You have time. You don't have to make the decision tomorrow. But start thinking about these things, especially when the fall starts. Because one thing to consider is each jurisdiction's timeline in terms of applying to sit for the exam is different. New York State has a 30-day window to apply for the exam. 3Ls can't apply to sit for the New York State bar exam yet. They have to wait until April 1st. However, a jurisdiction like Florida, where technically you're supposed to apply for the exam, you're 1L here, which I know sounds a little crazy, but that's just how they are. They have, their deadlines are much sooner. So you want to keep in mind that there's a deadline, to apply, and applying to sit for the bar is expensive. And if you can, get your application in by the priority deadline, and as opposed to the late deadline where you're going to end up paying more money, you want to make sure that you're within that period. Another thing that people may think about in terms of where to take the exam is, okay, well, where's my family? Some people like to take the exam where they're from. You know, you may be, you know, from Illinois and you know that you're going to stay in D.C. Your job may not require you to be barred in Maryland, Virginia, or D.C., so you may want to take the Illinois bar. You know, go back to Chicago or wherever you grew up, study for the exam there, and take the Illinois bar. Location of family, location of where, you know, your spouse or significant other or partner may end up if they have a, you know, job opportunity, that may drive your decision as well. Lastly, your long-term goals, which I know can sometimes be difficult to apprehend and to think about because none of us know where we're going to be, you know, 2 weeks from now as opposed to 5 years from now. But if you think and you, or if you're thinking of being in a certain area, you know, in 5 or 10 or 15 years, you know, you may want to think about staying for the jurisdiction there. Now, the thing about long-term goals is that this issue of reciprocity comes into play, okay? Reciprocity obviously is you're admitted in one jurisdiction and you are thinking of becoming admitted in another jurisdiction. And so reciprocity basically is the rules that govern how you can get admitted into the second jurisdiction if you're already admitted in jurisdiction A. Each jurisdiction is different, okay? There's no hard and fast rule regarding reciprocity. You know, you've probably heard that Maryland's reciprocity with nobody, which is basically true. Virginia is different. After you've been practicing for 5 years, and if you're going to be substantially practicing in Virginia, then you can be admitted on motion as an attorney in Virginia. You know, New York, everyone has a different rule in regards to reciprocity. So when you're thinking about long-term goals are important to think about when you're thinking about the jurisdiction to sit for, but also think that, well, if I'm barred in state X and I don't plan on moving to state Y for another 10 years, I may be able to get admitted to state Y through the reciprocity system because I've been practicing for a while. So think about that. But there are so many factors that go into what bar exam I'm going to take, and it's, you know, it's not an irreversible decision, obviously, because you can't, sign up and decide not to take the exam, but it is a very important decision. So it's something that you don't want to take lightly, and it's something that you really want to think about in the upcoming months going into the beginning of your third year. Yes?
Can you explain the process of waiving into D.C.?
Process of waiving into D.C. That was actually my next thing, but process of waiving into D.C. is a relatively easy process, yet an expensive one. The District of Columbia allows anyone to waive in who has a minimum scaled score on the multi-state bar exam, the MBE, of 133. Okay? That has not changed for a couple of years. That's the rule this year. It may change next year, but they said it probably won't, because that's just what they've been going with for the past couple of years. So you have to have a minimum scale score of 133. There's an application that you have to fill out. The application comes with an $800 fee. I know, I see the head shaking.
Do firms generally pay
those,
or is that usually?
Well, you'd have to check, but some firms may, some firms may not. It's about a 6 to 8 month wait in terms of determining whether or not you're going to be admitted. So it's a slow process. So you're not going to submit your materials and make a decision, you know, 3 weeks later. And you also, this is the other thing, you also have to be a member in good standing of the state upon which you've been admitted. So, and this question actually came up in another presentation. Someone asked me, well, if I fail the Virginia bar, but my MBE score is 145, can I waive into D.C.? The answer is no, because you're not a member of the bar in Virginia. You got a great MBE score, and the minimum MBE score required for D.C., but you're not a member of the Virginia bar, so the answer would be no there. So that's the fourth part. But that's the D.C. waiver rule. That's from 0 to 5 years, by the way. Okay. After 5 years, you can waive in on, you can do a motion as an attorney to waive in on your experience. If by some reason you just forget to do it in the first 5 years, or if your MBE score would not meet the minimum requirement. So that's the DC process.
So just to add to that, so we're in a little bit of a somewhat unique situation because the District of Columbia is the only jurisdiction that allows this kind of waiver. And so you'll hear an obvious question that you asked. well, I'm just going to take another bar and wait until you see it, and I'll figure out either the law firm will pick up the firm or I'll absorb it as a cost of doing business. And that's okay, but I don't know that it necessarily needs to be the standby. We will have, with frequency, we'll have students come in and say, I know I'm practicing in the federal bar only, or I know I'm going to be an international attorney, whatever that means to them for the rest of their careers, and they know that they just need a bar. And oftentimes that's the bottom line. I mean, matters given all the right reasons. If an employer says you need extra station, so be it. But if you're not committed to anything per se, one of the niceties about the DC bar is that the essay portion of the bar is not testing any nuances of DC law, because we don't have DC law. We're a district. We don't have our own, you know, they're the codes, but they're not applying anything that's going to cause you a trip up or a red herring or whatnot. So we never go on record to say it's an easier bar, but there are a number of individuals who will find that it's just more straightforward. And then to some degree, I don't know how fair this is, but there are probably a number of graduates who take that bar who may be coming from schools within DC where they've been slightly more academically challenged during the law school. And so although there's no curve on the bar, you kind of have a cohort of graduates who are sitting for it, which kind of keeps the overall score or the pass rate that they figure at the end of the day not necessarily as elevated. So my whole point being, don't necessarily discount the possibility of taking the DC bar as the first bar, depending on your individual path.
Any other questions about
the
DC bar? All right, so we've gone through what's on the bar. We've gone through, you know, how to be organizations. Let's just now kind of wrap up with just, you know, some things to walk away with and things to think about as you're moving forward. I know, you know, you're finishing up 2L, you're almost at the home stretch, ready to go. You don't want to think about the bar, but really these are things that you should just kind of get the wheel spinning in your head, because it's going to come up sooner than you think, and you don't want to be the person who's kind of like caught like a deer in headlights, like, whoa, why didn't I do this beforehand? Obviously, the first time to pass the bar is the best time to pass the bar. No one likes to sit for the exam more than once. The process for studying for the bar, and as I'm not that far removed from it, is a tough process. It is a steady process. It is a slow process. And it really is a test of endurance. So you want to input the best practices that you can when you are studying for the bar, so that when you get the envelope in October or November, or you sign on to the website with your code, you say congratulations, and you can scream and yell and, you know, tell all your friends, which is what I did. I just saw congratulations, didn't even read the rest of the thing. I was like, oh my God, I passed, and then I just, you know, called my mom. So obviously you really want to make sure that, number one, treat it like a job, okay? They say to treat law school like a job, treat studying for the bar like a job, okay? Have a schedule, have a set schedule. You know, put things in place that you are comfortable with and do things, but also, you know, take time for yourself. Because if you're studying till 1, 2 o'clock in the morning every day for 7 days a week, you're going to burn yourself out. You're going to be tired, and you're not going to get through the exam. Second thing is, if you can, try to take a bar review course, okay? Bar review courses are good tools to use because, number one, they put you on a schedule. Secondly, they give you all the tools that you need to study for the bar. You know, there are going to be subject matters, you know, for your specific jurisdiction. You're like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that is. And they're going to give you the materials that you need to understand it in a way that you can retain it and regurgitate it on the bar exam. Three, and Dean Jaffe will say this next year when we do our 3L, 4L bar exam review, don't have any major life events that you can control when you're studying for the bar. Don't get married when you're trying to study for the bar. I know two people in my class who were planning weddings in India, and and they were very stressed because they were planning weddings and also studying. They passed. They did pass on the first try, but try to avoid those at all costs if you can. Practice, practice, practice. You know, the way that you're going to learn how to write exams and take multiple choice exams is to practice. And you do that by just doing it over and over and over and over again. It's going to become very monotonous. It's going to become very boring. But it's going to help you. You're conditioning yourself. You're going to be conditioning yourself to get through those exercises and to ultimately get through the test and be successful on it. I just want to kind of talk to you about, you know, indicators, if you will, of success on the bar exam. Multiple studies have been done in terms of what class or what group of people, you know, will do well versus what class or what group will not do well. Obviously, LSAT score has been an indicator of success on the bar exam. The higher the LSAT score, you know, the better the chance that you're going to pass on the first try. There are obviously exceptions to that. Not everybody who had a high LSAT score or a high LSAT score passed on the first try. Not everybody who has a low LSAT score, you know, does not pass on the first try. But that's just something to kind of think about. Law school GPA is also an indicator. People who graduate, you know, in the top percentiles of your class have a better chance of passing on the first try versus people in the lower percentiles. With that being said, and you might be able to, Dean Jack will probably be better to speak to this than I will, but kind of looking at your overall course load and what you've done thus far, and obviously first year you had no control over, but 2L year you certainly didn't, you will go into your 3L year. Look at some of the courses that you've taken. If you feel that you don't have enough, you know, what we consider more challenging courses, you may want to consider signing up for those in your 3L year. Because again, it's all about building your endurance. It's all about, you know, building up your analytical skills that you can get for the exam. I'm not going to tell you which courses to take. I've already told you which one is highly recommended. But really, it's at the end of the day, it's your education. You're paying for your education, and you will get what you want out of your education. But, you know, definitely mix it up a little bit, and make sure that you throw in some of those courses that are deemed to be more difficult because they may or may not present themselves on the bar exam.
Myra, again, is absolutely correct. There's a modicum of tension with a small t when we kind of get to the portion of the bar of talking about course selection or the so-called bar courses. And we want to be on the record and off the record on behalf of our office, at least, of saying that it is your education, it is your tuition, you come here for certain reasons and are developed interest during school, and you're going to be following those interests. That being said, the numbers that Myra shared are true, which is that students in the lower percentiles of the class have typically a more difficult challenge passing the bar the first time out. And we assume fairly well that part of the reason is that if the 14 weeks of a particular subject matter were a particular challenge for certain students to get their arms around and really appreciate, imagine having to learn similar subject matter in a 3-day period over the course of the larger course of a 10-week prep, you know, leading up to a bar exam. And so we don't want to say take X, Y, and Z. We're not suggesting ever to say look at Maryland, look at all the essay subjects that they may test you on, make a list for yourself, and make sure you check them all up by the time you graduate, or you're not going to pass them on. That's ridiculous. But you know yourselves well. You know where you are with respect to where you wanted to be. You know where you are with respect to the class. You have a sense, and this is also a good opportunity, which I'm sure Myra's going to throw at the end, but we certainly encourage kind of one-on-one conversations following this session and going into the latter part of your second year and then certainly the third year. But really just want you to keep an eye on the very important notion. We want you to take the bar once. We want you to, there's a small selfish component. We want to report our bar pass numbers in certain jurisdictions as being high, but it's a small part because if that were the only case, I can tell you it's a really small percentage of that god-awful, you know, national magazine that puts reports out each year. But the real important one is you don't have to go through that agony and frustration more than once. You don't have to deal with a good employer or prospective employer that's saying, we'll kind of consider whether, you know, your employment's conditional or you get one more bite of the apple and then all the pressure's on the February bar if you weren't successful in July bar, et cetera, et cetera. So you want to at least be mindful of the course subjects, as Myra described some of them, but the jurisdictions that may not be right on all square here because that particular jurisdiction you're looking at is testing the essays on their own without worrying about going overboard in the other direction. And again, that's the kind of thing we can talk about on a case-by-case
basis. And I'm trying to... Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I was just wondering if you recommended a bar review course or.
Never.
We do not right now.
They're in the for profit business, we're in the non profit business.
Which one did you take?
Can I answer that question? Okay. I took bar review. This is my recommendation. There are a lot of bar review courses out there, obviously, and many of them, you know, put up shop on the sixth floor every other week. Do your due diligence. Do your research. It's an expensive investment, okay? And one that could, you know, I'm not going to say make or break your legal career because it's not, but you know, could really drive, as Dean Jaffe said, with your employment, everything else. So research which course you think is going to meet your particular interests. You know, ask them about, well, what's the process like? What's the program like? What's the homework like? You know, you're going to have homework. I mean, you know, you've been doing reading for the last 2 years, you should be used to it. But just do your due diligence and really shop around and find out which one's going to be best for you. You know, talk to your friends, talk to professors. But you're not, you know, I'll say this to you, just because your friend said, oh, I thought this one was great, doesn't mean that one's going to be good for you. So really, really do your due diligence on that one.
There are bar prep programs, for example, that are totally self-driven. They're almost all online, or you get a package from them and you're doing it on your own. Some folks might like that, and there are others who would say, my goodness, if I don't have a classmate who's poking me in the back with a pencil throughout the class for 10 weeks, I'm not going to stay awake, I'm going to blow it off, I'm going to find some rationale not to do well, and that's going to happen ultimately. A number of the programs in the larger group settings may not necessarily be live. And you may be somebody who needs a live person in front of you, at least with the perception that you need to be sitting up and paying attention because a live body is looking back at you. So maybe a video bar prep program doesn't work for you. There are other programs still, at least in certain jurisdictions, that will break down live groups into smaller sections so that they're really up your back and making sure you're focused on and getting in on your individual issues. And that may be even more relevant, you know, for you. You know yourself better than anybody's going to be able to describe to you. So, again, Myra's absolutely correct in terms of doing the due diligence and making sure it's working.
Yeah, you know your strengths and weaknesses. I knew that multiple choice is always a weakness of mine. Multiple choice exams and I just do not get along. And the reason why I ultimately did well in multiple choice exams is because I had to practice that. I had to take a lot of practice tests and do a lot of practice questions. If you know that that's a weakness of yours, maybe you might want to find, you know, the MBE might be a struggle for you. So you may want to find, you know, a bar prep course that does, you know, over, you know, above and beyond on MBE prep. You know, I'm just a better essay writer, so I felt more comfortable with essays. Each individual is different, and I implore all of you, don't allow your friends or other people to tell you what you should do drive that. At the end of the day, it has to be your own personal knowledge of yourself and what your strengths and weaknesses are that are going to help you get through it and get through it successfully. Next year we're going to have a 1 for 3Ls and 4Ls that's going to address more so of, you know, stress management, and actually since you're going to be at the point of actually starting to take your bar review course. We have a program here called the BEAT program, wherein it's sponsored by Barbary, and some of the Barbary professors come in and teach, you know, certain areas of law. And so if you want to get involved in that, you know, look out for it next year. It's kind of like just kind of getting your feet wet in terms of what you're going to be seeing in any bar review course that you take. Then, of course, as Dean Jaffe said, if you want to do one-on-one counseling or come talk to us, you're welcome to. Like I said, everyone can survive it. I survived it. and you can get through it successfully. You just really have to, you know, do your research. Get prepared for it. One thing I forgot to mention, I'm going to mention this quickly. As you know, getting admitted to the bar is not just successfully passing the exam, it's also going through character and fitness assessment. Jurisdiction does. Start thinking about documentation that you might have to compile, because there are some jurisdictions that require that you submit all of your documentation with your application to sit for the exam. There are some jurisdictions that do the fitness and character, the character and fitness assessment post-exam. Thank you. Post-exam or after you find out whether or not you pass. Maryland is one, Virginia is one, where they do it up front. New York is one where they do it on the back end. But even if they do it on the back end, it doesn't matter. You should really just kind of start thinking about, this is where I lived for the past 10 years. This is, you know, where I worked for the past 10 years. So you don't have to run out and do it tomorrow, but just kind of over the next couple of months, start thinking about that as well, because that's also an important part of the process. And you definitely don't want to get held up, as I did, because I forgot to give one piece of information on getting admitted once you pass the exam. So with that, any questions? Comments? I hope you're all not like, woo-hoo, like freaked out. All right, well, we are on the third floor in Suite 300 in the Office of Student Affairs. If you want to come by, both Dean Jackie and I, you can email us through the Student Affairs website if you want to set up an appointment to speak to us in more one-on-one if you have some concerns that you don't want to address in the session. But if not, thank you again for coming out on this rainy, rainy Friday morning. It's admitted to Students Day, so if you see any prospective students in the hallway, say hello, make them feel welcome. And that's it.
And if any of the portions of the last close to an hour, a little under an hour, are helpful, let your classmates know over the course of today that the session is being repeated tomorrow. Same time, they'll be in the JD Student Lounge on the sixth floor. It's a Friday, and kudos to all of you for taking this, seeing this as important and taking it seriously enough to come out. I'm not faulting your classmates, folks have things to do, but obviously we're trying to get this message out. It's not for our benefit, we're doing it for the students. So I encourage them to come out, and Myra promises that there'll be donuts.
Thanks for
the first thing, folks.
And coffee. All right, guys.
Thank you.